Porém.
We're back. I like this hook. You got a book you want to tell us about? Well, let's talk. There's no other place to do it. Only on Cast the Craze.
Welcome to Casting Craze Podcast. I am your host with the most, Sam the Craze, Ben Vera, and I am with...
George, the Dreamer.
Say what?
The Dreamer.
What you gonna do, George?
Yo, why you gotta talk right in the middle of my introduction? Bro? You killed my whole main introduction. Don't know who I am now.
All right, let's do it again. And I'm with...
We're good. Medina.
Chicka. Word, man, what's up?
You're about to stand up and start doing some b-boy stuff.
What's going on, George? Over there? Huh?
What up, man?
I'm drinking my tea concoction.
You know, it's a little weird because I can't hear the intro. So I don't know when you're on. I know you said we're about to start, but I can't hear the intro. I can't hear any music.
No?
No, which is fine.
You heard it? Did you hear it the other day?
Nope.
With
I just watch you.
Oh, you do?
I just watch you, and then when you go, okay, time to go. I don't hear the end credit either.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
That's no bueno.
It is what it is. It is April 24th, and this is the last show of the month for us. It's been a crazy few months now with this coronavirus thing, and I know we talk about it every time we come on, but yeah, it's been crazy, man. How you feeling? You good?
I'm feeling great, homie.
You're back 100% now?
So today was the first day in 10 days that I decided to work out because I lost my Gastonness, and I felt weak as a forget about it.
Forget about it.
So you know, I did chest, I did triceps, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna end with cardio. So I get on my stationary bike. And I put it on a setting that's in the mountains, right? And so it reacts, and the gears get harder and harder as you're going pedaling upwards. 5 minutes in, I crawled off that bad boy. I was like, it was over. I was like, I need to rest a little bit more.
The other day I went running, right? Yeah. I go running, ran about, I don't know, 3-4 miles, whatever it was. I come home and decide I'm gonna do a couple of squats. Done. I caught a cramp. I was like, yo, what the hell, dude? I'm like, I really gotta work out more. Like, I gotta work my, because I used to play basketball when I was younger all the time. I don't do any of that stuff now. It's like, you know, you go to work, I drive around all day, so I sit in the car,
right?
And like, I don't do anything. So your body, really, man. You're talking about it. Right,
crazy.
Now?
It's crazy. I was like, whoa, what the hell happened? The moment I got on, I was like, oh, this is gonna be a hard one. Why did I pick that one? I'm like, and I'm pushing, and I'm like, I'm moving the bike as if I was crawling. Pedals were like going like, I'm like, oh, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not gonna make it up this hill. I'm gonna fall right off. Yeah, what are you doing?
Oh, God, nothing. What are you doing?
I'm watching you play with the screen. And
makes you nervous?
Yeah, cojo lo que te quiero, okay?
There you go.
He pulled up the Spanglish. So I was hurting. So I was like, all right. And then normally I would try to go on tonight, but I'll be so burnt out after the two shows we record. I'm not going to
No, I hear you. Yeah, man, it's just, and now this has become a reality for me, like this, I'm doing this all day.
Oh, it's nonstop. I have a bottle of, alcohol spray that I carry with me all over the house.
After all of this stuff, the common cold is going to kill me because my immune system's going to be shot. It's going to not know, dirt's going to be like, oh yeah, we got him now.
Yes.
Like, it's going to be crazy.
That's it. So today... Let's talk about the potential guest today.
Okay.
So initially on my Twitter account, I was character named Bunny reached out to me wanting to connect. And I guess the tagline was, do you want to know about Bunny? And so I looked, it looks like a cosplay character, does a lot of conventions, and she does appearances, throws out the ball at the ball games, takes a lot of photo ops or whatever. So I was like, oh, this'd be cool. She has a big following, looked really, you know, and she had a project that was coming down the pike that so we started connecting that she wanted to promote. So we locked her in. Then she went dark. And I was like, oh, I got to stop promoting April. And she's not responding, so I'm going to move forward as if she's not going to be on April's show. Then on Monday, Bunny reached out and said, are we still on? And I was like, well, it's up to you. She wants to connect me with a third party. I said, well, we've been connecting personally, and now I have to go through a third party. I'm not going to do it. So I ceased responding. And then she responded again, are we on? I said, yes. Here's the number. This is the time you call. And then last night at around 11:45 p.m., I get tweeted that she won't be on the show, but she will have the artist that did the comic book speaking for her on the show.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was a little disturbed by that. And so when I looked up the artist, Jeffrey Henderson, he is an actor, producer, director, writer, musician. He does it all. He did a Star Wars short called The Saber Corsair. So he's a fantastic storyboard artist. He did the comic book, The Bunny, which was pretty dope. I read the whole thing. It was pretty cool. So I'm actually excited and want to talk to this guy. So hopefully he calls in tonight. So you didn't see any promos going out because this has been a weird experience trying to connect with a character that can't talk to us, but is using an affiliate. So we'll see what happens tonight. And if he comes on, great. If he doesn't, we'll just keep it moving. Once we've locked him in, then I'll put a promo out promoting his appearance. But that's what we got looking forward to there. And our topic of today.
Yeah, on the Get Your Meds, we have a topic. Okay, hear that background noise? Called Finding Your Dynamic Duo. And it's a play on that. But basically, I look at an artist-writer combo as a dynamic duo, right? Now, obviously, when you're creating comics, it's a whole team. It's not just an artist and a writer. There's an artist. And an artist consists of a penciler, inker. I don't know about today. I think a lot of that stuff is done digital now. There's a lot of digital inking that's done now, so I don't know that you know how far they've gone with that, but you have your colorist, your letterer, your editor, and all that other stuff. But for the most part, independent artists like ourselves are always looking for our counterpart, right? If we're writers, we're looking for the artist. If we're an artist, we're looking for writers to complete the story that we're trying to tell. And when I thought about this, I was like, all right, well, what are some of the ways that an artist, say, for example, somebody's watching a show right now who's a writer and says, damn, how do I find that artist? So I figured you and I can, you know, tell them a little bit about how we went about finding artists for the books that we've completed. Now, I have two books, The Adventures of Wonder Duck and Russ 5377. I've been fortunate enough to work with the same group of artists for both books.
Right.
So that was pretty easy. But you have a bunch of other
whole lot of cats.
And you've worked with a few different artists. So I'll tell them how I found mine, which kind of goes into how you found yours.
Right.
Big Cat Studios were the group of artists. It was a whole studio who drew the books for me. They've now changed their name since. They're called Nine Lives Animation, I believe it's called now. So a lot of that was back and forth on the internet. I've never met the guys. The guys are actually in the Philippines. So I've never physically met the guys. I've spoken to them a whole bunch via emails and stuff like that. And now this was 10 years ago when it was very different. Communicating was very different. There was no Instagram. There was no, I don't even think there was Twitter back then when we were doing this. And this must have been a little longer than that because you actually put me onto them, Sam.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, yes. Okay. And you found them on a forum.
I found them, I believe, yeah, it was on a forum or DeviantArt. It was one of those two.
One of those two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think on my end, finding an artist for me was easier than normal. For me, it was, you kind of said, hey, George, these guys are pretty cool. Check them out.
Right.
I said, all right, let me check them out. They were like, yeah, we're interested. Boom. We got it going. And we went. But I think the most important part to remember, and I think most people, I don't know if most people don't, I don't want to generalize, but contracts. It's very important that you put things on paper.
Yep.
When you're hiring an artist, okay, especially somebody, you know, overseas or whatever, it's very important to have something in writing that says, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. This is how things are going to get paid. And this is when this stuff is due. Sign here. I'll sign here. We have a contract. Let's go. It worked for me. I've heard horror stories where some people, you know, send a script, send money, and never got pages. So, you know, it sucks, but it does happen. How did you find your artist, Sam?
Oh, initially it was Big Cat back in the days. I don't know if it was Spiderweb. Was it? It was something called Spiderweb.com. Mm. It was a forum. I think I found them through there. The spider's web. And we connected and we discussed what I'm willing to pay. They were good with that. And then I wrote up a contract immediately. So once we've agreed on the verbal terms, then I put it down. And so what I did was, I think with them, I sent them the script and the character designs. And I said, this is what I'm looking for. And I think with them, it was with Scary Airy was the first project. Mm. And it was the children's book. And I said, here's the story. Here are the characters. Send me your drafts. So once I've seen the thumbnails, then I gave them a percentage. I think the way I did it was, I'll give you, say if the contract was worth $1,000, just for saying.
Yeah.
And so what I said was, all right, once I approve the look and design of the characters, I'll give you $100. I'll give you 10% of the total fee. Then once they sent me the rough layout for the entire book in pencil, then I gave them 25% to continue with the inks. And then that's how we did it. So once I approved every phase, they got, you know, and I wrote that out clearly on the contracts and with timelines. So we talked about the timelines. Here's what I'm looking for as, can you meet this? They said, yes. Okay, boom, boom, boom. So the terms were all written down. I only used PayPal. With them, I used PayPal, but with another guy overseas, I had to wire the money. Because he didn't know how to use PayPal, and I think he was in India.
Do they charge you a fee for that?
The wiring, yeah. So I accepted. I accepted the fee. But yeah, that's how I did it. I posted, hey, I'm looking for X, Y, and Z. This is what I'm looking for. Blah 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 blah. And then people would reach out to me, and I look at styles, and I'm like, no, that's not what I'm looking for. No, that's not what I'm looking for. Then I would see their portfolio, and I'm like, all right. Yours are like, it's going to be a match, you know, but here are the terms, or you agree with the terms, whatever, and get the specifics going. But it was important to find the right person for the look, and they really complimented the Scary Airy. And then I hooked them up with you.
Right. So you said something that I think it's very important when looking for an artist, right? Because, I can only speak from a writer's perspective. A lot of times, you know, you'll write a story. And in your mind, I think as a writer, in your mind, you know what that story, you know what you want that story to look like.
Right.
Right. But for me, anyway, I'm going to speak for myself. I'm limited in my ability to draw that style. So I'm looking for somebody who has that style. The style to me is very important.
Yes.
Because I'll tell you why I say that. We are working on a book called Street Journaling. You've heard of the Street Journal.
Right.
And finding an artist for that book is very difficult. Not because there aren't a lot of talented artists. There are a lot of talented artists out there, but artists cost a lot of money.
Yep.
I think the going rate for like a pencil page, I've seen anywhere between $100 per page for pencils, you know, and now you got to get an inker who's probably going to charge you close to that. Then you're looking for a colorist who's going to charge you, you know what I mean? So it starts adding up. So when we're looking for somebody who can draw a book, when I say style, I'm talking about this book is about, you know, a kid growing up in the inner city in 1995. Now that sounds easy enough. Cool. All right, just give them some reference and have them draw it. I think what we found when we've done that is that it sounds easy. 1995. Give them some reference shots of the 90s. You know, Naughty by Nature, Nas. Uh-huh. You know, Dr. Dre, and let them draw it. And it doesn't work. Because you have to understand the era as well as a period piece.
Yes.
So you can't just copy what you see. You have to know what it was like to live in that era.
Yep.
So that I think that's part of the problem with this particular book. As far as styles go, Sam, what do you look for in your artist? Like, what is it that you're looking for when you're creating or writing a story? For example, Forbidden. For example, I'll narrow it down.
So Forbidden is the full graphic novel that's going to be coming out this fall. The initial artist back in the days was Andy Balaroyal. And I think he complemented the style really good. He captured the look and feel of Forbidden that Chump didn't want to continue on with Forbidden. But anyway, so I had to go find another artist to finish up the project. But I was looking for someone that was going to get the emotions of the book. Not necessarily mimic Anibal's style, but somebody who was able to, number one, meet my budget. So I was very limited.
Budget.
I was very limited, so I couldn't be selective, as I was back then, because this time I didn't have that purse strings. So I was very specific. This is what I'm willing to pay. And I had about 30 guys jump in. And then some of them, when they started talking to me, they're like, yo, can you add an extra, can you raise it up an extra 50%? And I'm like,
this was now?
This is when I was negotiating for Forbidden. Yeah. And, you know, so I had to, you know, weigh down. And so I found somebody who's able to capture just emotion and dynamic scene ability, someone who's able to paint. And the guy that I got, he did it really well with black and white. Now, his style is very bulky. And so his women are very voluptuous and bulky. So that was a sacrifice that I made because he captured the look. He was able to do big scenes really well, captured a lot of different elements really well, angles really well, perspective really well. So I made the exception. I was like, all right, I'll let that slide. And he's within my budget. So I think it was with Forbidden. If I could, I would have gotten somebody similar to the guy who did my cover.
Yeah.
Because I did pay a lot more money for the cover artist. And this guy did a fantastic job. There's Samuel. No, it's not there. So it would have been. The image is not there, but I couldn't pay the same rates as the guy that I hired for the cover. But I was looking for someone who's just able to tell visually, without having to read it. You can actually tell the story from the movement of the characters, but from panel to panel. And he did that really well.
See, when you talk about samples and you talk about angles and things like this, right? I think for artists, when you're posting things up on DeviantArt, okay, And if you're an artist, you should be posting up not just big splash scenes, you know, just Spider-Man, you know, swinging through the town or Superman flying towards the screen.
Right.
That's cool. And those shots are probably awesome. Wolverine cut into somebody or something like that. Those are awesome shots. But if you want to get hired, you need to show sequential art.
Yes.
Because sequential art is what we're looking for as writers. We right. want to know, okay, you can draw that character and it looks great. That looks awesome. But can you tell a story in panels? So you want to have your sequential art up on the screen so that when we're clicking through it, okay. Right. Oh, wow. Okay, he can do that. Right. The other thing I think that gets overlooked are backgrounds.
Yep.
Backgrounds. Simple things. A kitchen. Somebody on the phone. Talking on the phone. Simple scenes that you may not even think that's not important. I just want to draw that fighting scene where they're kicking each other's butt. That's cool. And we're going to be looking for that because that sells. But we want to know that you can tell that story. You know, what if it's right before he has to jump into action, he gets a phone call. Can you draw that person with the hand? Does that hand look right when he's holding the phone? You know,
yeah.
Is the perspective behind him correct?
Right.
Those are the things that as writers, we're looking for. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I was going to ask you this also, Sam, when you said that he sends you samples, do you normally pay for those samples or are those kind of part of the deal? Let me see what you can do with my character. Show me what you've got. And then
it's part of the package deal. So it's the way I had it set up and you know what, and that'll be a good time for another show. I can actually show you a sample of the contract. But the way I had it set up was you will send me rough designs of the characters. Once I approve them, I'll drop it 10% of whatever the total payment is to continue. Boom. Once I approve that, then every 10 pages, this is how we did it. So the first 10 pages, I'd have to approve the design, the layout. So he did it in rough pencils, right? Because this is a digital artist too, so he did everything on the computer. So he illustrated in pencil, but on the computer, he inked it over the pencils on the computer. So he just went over it, he scanned it in and whatever, and he just boom. So I didn't have to worry about getting an inker. So once I approved the layouts to the first 10 pages, then he got 50% of the page rate. So say if the page rate hypothetically was $50, he'd get $25 for each page from the pencils. Then when I got the finished inks, then he get the other 50%. That's the way I did it. So this way it worked out. So this way there was an incentive for him to keep working, and he was getting money. And there was an incentive for me to make sure, because I wouldn't pay unless I approved it. And if there was some things that said, you know, I need this change and I need this change, and I would go over some of the pages and send it back to him. And then he'd go immediately within 48 hours, send it back to me. So what about this? Good. Boom. Immediately on PayPal. And I noted on PayPal, it's like, you know, approve for issue 3, pages 1 through 10, layout designs. And then when that was done, the inks came in and I approved that. Then I was like, approved pages 1 through 10 of issue 3, final pages. Boom.
Yeah.
And that's how I did it every time. So I had a journal, a daily, you know, journal of everything that's happening with PayPal. And every time at the end of every project, I printed out that stream of payments and I put it in a folder with his file with the contract. So I always had it.
Yeah. And how far along are you guys on that?
He's done.
Oh, he's done. Now we're just waiting
for you to letter. Your lettering.
Well, send me the rest of the book.
Yeah, it's the last 10 pages. I got to send it to you tonight.
Yeah, send it to
me. Yeah, he's done.
All right, cool. Yeah, no, because that's the thing. Like when you were talking about samples and you said that you liked the way he did angles, is that something that you saw on his, when you were looking for him, like his storytelling, or was that something that he did for you, like that you kind of discovered as he was doing your pages?
No, so when he and I connected, because he was one of the ones that were putting in the bids for the project, I looked up his page on DeviantArt, and I was very impressed by his stuff. And so then when we connected, I sent him what Anibal's done on the first two issues. I said, here's the finished pages for the first two issues. So he got to see that in the second, the way they moved from scene to scene. And I also sent him, the hell's that?
It's my, go ahead. Don't worry about it. We're good. It's my office is going off right now.
I thought it was your stomach. And and he got all the character designs. And then as I was writing a story, new characters were coming into play. So I would send him those designs. I would illustrate them myself and send them to him. Gotcha. And then he would have to show me his rendition of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the good thing, and I know you do this too, and I do this as well. You know, when I first started doing this, I wanted to be the artist on the book. So a lot of my characters I had already designed. Like, and that's normally how I start anyway. I start with a design of a character and then I put him in a story. Just do it that way. But a lot of my characters were already designed. So I wasn't, because some artists will ask you a fee for designing a character.
Yes.
And that's something that could totally happen. I guess that, you know, that's
again, I wasn't that's leaving it up to him. I was doing him. I did the layouts and the designs of the character looks.
Right.
And exactly. And then all he had to do was just try to emulate that look or in his style of art.
Right.
That was it. He had to just recreate the look. So I controlled the dance the whole way through because I didn't want anybody come down the road saying, well, you didn't have on the contract that I had to design your characters, so I want an extra fee for that. You know, so I did it. I made sure that I took care of it.
Well, yeah, that's you know, what it also eliminates is the whole Steve Ditko, Stan Lee thing, who created Spider-Man.
Yes. Right?
I created the entire character. I drew it, I wrote it, and you're basically just drawing what I'm.
Yeah, even you know, the basic soldiers, I just gave them a look of the uniform, and I said they will all be wearing the same damn thing. So I don't care if they have blonde hair, blue hair, green hair. That the uniforms are the same unless they are a different rank. That's it.
Right.
And then I would show him a little variation of the different rank.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, I love the process, the creative process. Like when you're working with an artist, like I love that, you know, what you get when you open up your email address and you know that there are pages in there and you start looking through these pages and you're like, holy God, because your writing is, you know, coming to life. Through the artwork that this person just did.
Yep.
So I love that part of it. What do you do when you get a page that doesn't look the way you thought it was going to look, even after you guys went over the thumbnails and it just wasn't executed right? What, like, have you encountered that with the artist?
I got, no, I would kept get it into his layouts. So I was fortunate enough to get the pencil layouts. And so, in fact, I wouldn't pay him on the last page of the final issue because I didn't like the angle or the look of of that scene. And so I needed the angle to be a little different, and I needed to see more of the demons that were flying in the air. He was able to do it, you know. The good thing about this guy is that he was very receptive to criticism. There was no ego. So that was good. He knew that I was an artist myself. So I'm basically saying, hey, this is the angle. And I would spell it out in the panels.
Yeah.
Panel one, you know, those, you know, bird's eye view or worm's eye view or, you know, head on shot with camera over the shoulder, whatever. So I would actually position the cameras in how I spelled out that frame. And hopefully making it as easy as possible for him to be able to just illustrate that scene.
Yeah. When I was working with the guys in the Philippines, I like to write my, I like to let the artist kind of like do his thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I do write, my scripts will tell you what I want on the page, but sometimes if I don't have anything clearly in my head that I want drawn specifically, I'll just say, you know, have fun with it. You know, this is what the scene is. Go for it. I did that mostly on the Wonder Duck book. When they were doing Russ, for some reason, I decided, let me do like an open page, almost like I'm going to tell you what's on this page in just like a paragraph. And you guys break it down however you want.
Right.
And for some reason, I ended up getting a collage. it was like just like a almost like a poster of just things going on a page rather than panels, because I let them kind of do what they wanted to do. The stuff came out well, but that's not what I was looking for. So I knew then that when I was doing my Wonder Duck book, I would have to say panel one, panel two, panel three, panel four.
Yeah.
Now, that might have very well been because they're international, and and you can't sit down, say, in a meeting side by side, okay, this is what I'm looking for and this is what I'm doing.
Right.
So you have to rely on the script and on maybe just a couple of messages you're sending via email or whatever it is to get what you want on the page.
Right.
You know, and that's something that I think you have to take into consideration. But for the most part, for me, the biggest thing is when choosing an artist is money.
Yep.
It's the budget.
Yes.
Unfortunately,
money talks.
You know,
yeah.
It's the budget. It's because how much can you spend on that page and not go broke?
Yeah.
And what's still fair for the artist, or enough for the artist, you know, to get paid for it.
Yeah.
You know, for the work that they're doing.
Yeah.
And you know, it's tough. Sometimes it's hard, man. And I know you've done it, and you know what it's like to be out there negotiating, and you know.
And I'm a nickel and dimer, so it's like
nickel and dimer.
But we're gonna go to commercial because I'm expecting the call. So hopefully the call will come in after the commercial break. So let's cross our fingers that it does.
Cool.
Yeah, that's him. He's being at this. Why are we hiding? I'm not hiding. I'm trying to catch it. Oh, what are we catching? What are we catching? I'm trying to catch the craze. Catch the craze. What? The craze? Like the disco craze? No. No. What are you wearing? What am I wearing? What are you wearing? I'm fresh. No one says fresh anymore. Why are you acting up? I'm not acting up. You're acting up. Come on, man. Stop acting up.
Candy girl. All right. So the phone has not gone off yet. So we'll continue this conversation. Until it does, but
okay,
yeah, crazy. It's a crazy, crazy world, Georgie. Crazy, crazy world.
Yeah. All right, well, okay, so cool. So finding the dynamic duos, right? So that's what we were talking about, and I can't exactly remember where we left off, but
you said about I was talking about how I nickel and dime, and I negotiate the hell out of a project. Because look, once I've on my own determined what my budget is, and I can tell you, I take a lot of heat too. Because normally I go on forums and I'm like, all right, look, I got a project. This is for the budget, and then I got these knuckleheads who are not working for any professionals, who don't have anything out in the market, but they think they just the phone's for me.
Oh, look at that.
This is Cash the Craze. Is this Mr. Henderson?
It is. How you doing? Who's this?
Good. I am Sam the Crazy Man Vera for Catch the Craze podcast, and my co-host on the line is George Medina. George?
Hey, what's going on? Jeffrey, how are you?
I'm good, man. How you guys doing?
Good, good.
Staying safe in all this, in the midst of the apocalypse?
Yeah, no, dude. It's crazy.
It's insane, it is, man.
It is.
How are you doing out there? Are you in Cali?
I'm in Los Angeles, yeah.
Okay.
And
how's it over there?
It's a weird thing, man, because it's beautiful, and you go outside, and it's easy. I mean, fortunately, me and my girl live right across the street from a really big, beautiful park, which helps.
Yeah.
But it's a really stark contrast where you come in and watch the news and watch all this madness going on, and it's I don't know, man. At the end of the day, I'm much more afraid of large groups of scared dumbasses than I am of anything else.
Yes.
Yep.
So
indeed,
I just think,
indeed.
I mean, and you know, and truthfully, man, like I think a lot of this stuff going on, like, you know, it's gotten so bad in New York, it's gotten so bad all over the country. And it's a shame that, you know, they have to keep putting these protocols and these rigid things in place But I think ultimately it's because you can't rely on people to just not act like dumbasses.
Yeah.
No, you're right. You're right.
And then they get all pissed.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, and people get all pissed off because, well, I don't want to be told what to do, and you're infringing on my freedom. It's like, well, yeah, well, if you didn't act like a fucking moron, maybe you wouldn't have to. I don't know. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm crazy. You know.
No, today, actually, here in New York, they shut down playgrounds because people were congregating in the playground. So the governor said, all right, you guys are not listening, so we're going to have to just shut these things down, and you just don't get playgrounds now. Now you don't have playgrounds. So there you go.
Yeah,
it's like, it's like kids.
Under ideal circumstances, that's scary, but with what's going on with those guys and those poor people who are braving all this stuff to look out for others, man, it's just crazy, that, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing, man. It's amazing. It's crazy. But, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Please, that's like thanking me for giving me a present.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Jeff. For the people that don't know who Jeffrey Henderson is, on planethenderson.com, which I love the name of your website. But tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks. Oh, man. Let me see. I do a lot of stuff creatively. I mean, like, functionally, I'm pretty much unemployable in the real world anymore because I've kind of been doing freelance creative stuff for such a long time.
Right.
I started out doing drawing comic books, which led, and then at the same time, I studied acting for a really long time. I did voiceover stuff in theater for a long time and played music. And a lot of this goes back to, I kind of have my own like Marvel Comics origin story where I had a really terrible accident when I was a kid that left me bedridden for a long time. So I couldn't physically go out and do little kid stuff. So my grandmother and my mom, who raised me, kind of brought the outside world to me. So it was all guitars and record players and comic books and drawing pads. And I think that's where a lot of this stuff came from by extension. So, from comic books, I went to doing like film storyboard stuff. That's actually what brought me to Los Angeles. And I've been really fortunate that I worked on a lot of movies. I've worked with a lot of big people and a lot of stuff that I like a lot. And then that has led to me doing like writing and directing my own stuff. And I've been doing a lot of acting and voiceover stuff. A couple years ago, I did a short Star Wars film that blew up and was one of the grand prize winners in Lucasfilm's short film contest, and that kind of took on a life of its own, which was crazy. And I don't have any delusions of grandeur about it. Like, it's cool, you know, for having $9 in a weekend, it's all right. But but just the fact that it resonated with people the way that it did was kind of cool. And then that's led to some other stuff. And I think the one big advantage of being so steeped in all this geeky stuff since I was a kid is that now that I'm writing more than anything, and I'm kind of developing my own stuff, but it comes back to this simple thing that I used to say a lot when I was storyboarding, is that, you know, movie productions are huge, crazy machines with all these moving parts and all these people and all this ego and all this, all that stuff. Like, all the cliches are all cliches for good reason. But, but the one thing is that, you know, my field of expertise really is less about drawing than it is storytelling. I mean, in a whole movie production, I'm the only guy with the fucking word story in my job title. You know what I mean?
Right.
So drawing's more in a means to that end. So now I'm just trying to ride out the apocalypse, and I'm just kind of doing my own thing. And it's craziness.
That's amazing.
So we'll see what happens, man. But I mean,
go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead. No,
I was just
going to
say, all right, I'll shut up. What do you mean?
Who's on first? No. What I was going to ask you was, you said something very interesting. You said when you were a kid, you had this accident that left you bedridden, and you started, you know, you fell in love with comics and music and things of that nature.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever worked outside of the creative industry? Like, have you, you know, how most of us start off, you know, maybe you work at a fast food place. Like, how did you start off? How did you get into the comic book industry? Let's start there.
Well, okay. when I was a kid, my dad and my mom got divorced when I was very young. And so my mom took me and my brother, and we moved to Baltimore with my grandmother. And then my dad was a really successful and accomplished commercial director. So when I'd go and visit him, once I got better enough to be able to travel and stuff, I'd take the Metroliner to New York on the weekends. But he was more interested in banging Venezuelan models two at a time than raising a kid. So, and back then it was very different because it wasn't like everything's freelance now. But back then, like he had this bullpen of storyboard guys and guys that would do that stuff for him that were in-house. And they were these old cats, you know, the drinking Glenn Levitt with the suspenders on and the cigar. And they'd be like, and he'd pawn me off on them for the whole weekend while he was out doing his thing. So they'd be like, all right, kid, it's just like drawing Spider-Man, except it's a guy with a Pepsi. Go. And so by the time I graduated high school, I'd done like $250,000 worth of free storyboard shit for my cat agency. And then storyboards and comics, you know, there's a lot of shared literacy there. I mean, because ultimately drawing comics, doing storyboards, it comes back to the same thing where you're essentially a director. It's just your medium is paper rather than film. But theoretically, a lot of the same discipline applies. It's composition and lighting and flow and framing and even acting, because you're trying to capture specific gestures and specific facial expressions to convey specific things. So to me, all this shit essentially goes back to storytelling. So I think part of it was because of, you know, my dad being kind of a bastard. And part of it was because I had grown up so, like, comics were, and especially when you're a little kid, you know, you don't have the sophistication to make the distinction that it's just a comic book. To me, that shit was real. Like, I learned to read from comics. I learned morality and right and wrong from comics. So by the time I got old enough to start working, I was so entrenched in it and so in love with all that stuff that after that experience doing all those boards for my dad, I was like, well, I can, it would be cool to keep doing this and just do it for comics. So, you know, I would do spot work here and there. I did a lot of indie stuff. Eventually I did some stuff for DC and for Image and did a lot of my own stuff. So, and then doing comics is, you know, there's kind of a direct progression where like one kind of begets the next. And so, you know, I mean, I'm very, very, very grateful. And I feel very blessed that my inner Peter Pan 12-year-old has turned into like viable employment opportunities instead of me being in a padded cell somewhere, you know,
that's
instead of a fucking room at Bellevue with a straitjacket on going, I love Spider-Man. Spider-Man's great. God, you know,
incredible, man. So that obviously led to, like you said, the story storyboarding in Hollywood. And I was reading some of the credits here, like, you know, Christopher Robin and, you know, Twilight Eclipse, 30 Days of Night and all these things. That must have been surreal, like working on these sets and like, okay, I'm doing, you know, the storyboards for these big companies. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, the crazy part about that is, again, this goes back to when I was a kid, but like, to this day, man, like living in Los, because I'm an East Coast guy, dude. I mean, I grew up back and forth between Baltimore, New York, and Detroit. How's that for the triple crown of blue collar, hard ass East Coast Irish upbringing? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, and so when I was a kid and I'd watch TV and I'd watch movies, especially because I was essentially a captive audience, I never looked at Los Angeles like I didn't know it was a real place. You get that kid logic going. I thought it was like fucking Valhalla or like some fantasy world, or like, I just knew that it was always sunny, that there were beautiful people and they made movies there. So when I finally got to be here, when I finally visited the first time, that's never worn off. Like there's still, like, I'm not saying that there's not stuff that goes along with it, because there certainly is. And again, a lot of the cliches are cliches for good reason, but there's something so surreal about it where, like, when I recognize something from a movie or from a TV show, or I see some celebrity and the novelty of it still hasn't worn off, where I get all like, I feel like I'm 5 years old again. I'm like, oh, this is cool. And, and then, you know, I'll tell you a story that kind of encapsulates the whole thing. I worked with Sam Raimi really closely for a long time on a bunch of consecutive projects. And I was such a huge fan of his stuff, like, you know, Army Darkness and Evil Dead and all the stuff that he did. And I knew, and he's an East Coast guy. He's from Detroit. He did all that stuff on his own, which I have a lot of respect for. So when I finally got the call to go in and work on Spider-Man, I was a little freaked out because it's like one of those meet your hero thing. More than anything, I was afraid that I was going to meet him and he'd be an asshole and it would ruin all. It would prohibit me from loving his work anymore, because that's happened a couple times too. But yeah, I go in then, and he's the coolest dude ever. He's just such a sweetheart. He was so, even if he wasn't who he is, even if he was like an old dude that had a shoe store, he'd be one of the sweetest people I'd ever met. But the fact that he's been able to remain that cool and unaffected in spite of his success is really something. Yeah. So we go in and he's, he's talking about Spider-Man and I'd read the script and he pulls up this big ass box of action figures on his desk and he's choreographing fight scenes with action figures with like Spider-Man and the Vulture and all this stuff. And I spontaneously just started laughing. And he looked at me like I was crazy because we didn't know each other. I mean, this is the first time I'd really met him. And he's like, what's so funny? And I collected myself and I was like, man, what fucking alternate reality did I wake up in this morning where I'm sitting here choreographing a Spider-Man movie with Sam Raimi? What the fuck is going on? And that pretty much encapsulates the whole thing, man. Like, I just, like with some of the credits you rolled off or some of the other stuff I worked on, like, I can't think about it too much because if I do, it just seems so preposterous, like in a good way. It's not a criticism, like it's a good thing. Like, I just feel like that my love of this stuff has been able to translate into like a career is crazy.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's the dream.
You know, and I'm really grateful, man. And like, and now by extension to have some of this other stuff going on, I'm really grateful for it, man. And none of it's lost on me. And even the bad stuff at the time can be really frustrating because, like, I won't say who it was, but I had a couple years ago where I worked for a director that was like the Muhammad Ali of Hollywood douchebags. Like, he was like the Voltron of douchebags, where he was like a Uber douchebag comprised of the parts of lesser douchebags, to where he's like the Frankenstein's monster of fucking LA assholes. Wow. And,
right.
He was so bad that I had to go in the bathroom and I was hiding out in the bathroom stall and I had to call my girlfriend to talk me off the ledge because I was that close to throwing this guy out his third story window.
Wow.
But even that kind of stuff, you look back on later and it's funny. I'm an experience junkie, man. I like having the anecdotes and the experience because you can't take any of this shit with you. What really lasts is, you know, that kind of stuff, man. I love soaking it in. So I try to be open and I try to, if I'm fortunate enough to be up for a project, I try to do the best I can and offer something worthwhile. And, you know, cause it's not a dress rehearsal, man. And I think part of it goes back to me being a kid. Like, I sit and spent so much time staring out windows and wishing I could be up and about. So then when I finally was, I really try not to take any of it for granted. I don't want any of it to be lost on me. I don't want to be cynical. I don't want to be jaded. I don't want to be one of these assholes that rolls their eyes and doesn't give a shit where I'm too cool. Fuck all that, man. Like, I want to revel in it and celebrate the fact that I'm lucky enough where I get to indulge this shit for a living, you know?
Yeah. No, sure, man. Amen to that. And it sounds like you've had, like you said, you've had your fair share of guys who you loved working with and guys that you were like, okay, let me just get this project done and over with, right? Like,
I mean, to be real, like, I've been really fortunate that the vast majority of my experiences have been really good. Like, comparatively, there haven't been that many terrible people, but the people who were terrible were really awful. But again, you know, cliches are cliches for a reason. And the other thing too is I try to be, I try to get my head around it in the sense that, you know, when you're working with someone like that, it's finite. Like, you know, you do the best you can. Sometimes you run into difficult personalities, whatever. But I always look at it like people like that are ultimately their own payback anyway. There's nothing I can do that's going to make it worse for them than then just having to wake up in the fucking morning and be them, you know?
Yeah. No, for sure,
so,
man.
I try to be cool about it. And I try to just enjoy the time. And, like, you know, and if someone's that way, then you got to let it go, man, because you're not going to change the system. You're not going to change them. It's the same thing like what's going on politically with everyone so divided and everyone's got their own thing. And it's like, you know, I get to the point where I try to stay out of it. Not that I don't have opinions and not that I'm not passionate about it, but some people make it very clear that they're not open to having their mind changed, that they're not open to hearing another point of view, that critical thinking isn't something that's important to them. So I'm not going to bang my head against the wall trying to teach a dog to play chess. Like, I just let it go. And I'm like, all right, cool, man. Do your thing. You know?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right, man. And what I love about like just the conversation we're having, you're very passionate. You are a passionate person. So you obviously have your views and your opinions, but you sound like you just know when the time comes to like speak on that, or maybe just hold back. That's not important enough. Let's just talk about something else. Like, even the conversation we're having now is like, we're vibing on like, let's talk about the creative side of what you do for a living. And I love that, you know?
Well, I appreciate that, man. And I mean, you guys are New York guys. I mean, I think there's a certain amount of it. Maybe it's that East Coast thing that, because it's weird. Like, I'm out here. I've literally had people stop me at conventions or when I meet them, and they're like, oh, you're an East Coast guy, right? I'm like, how do you even know that? It's a vibe. And I think part of that is because out here, and I'll preface this, dude, I love living in Los Angeles. This isn't a criticism. I love living. Even with all the weirdness, I love it. But I think the difference is back east, like, it's harder to get away from people. Like, you, by definition, by design, you're stuck around people all the time. Subway, on the street, in an office, in the tiny ass apartment, like driving on the 95, going to Baltimore, going to Boston, going to Pittsburgh, going to Philly for a concert, whatever the deal, it's much harder to sequester yourself if you want to. And I think people from the East Coast develop an innate sense of choosing your battles. Like, because you have to. It's a survival thing. Like, you can't approach everything either a 1 or a 10. You have to graduate in the middle, because you'll go fucking berserk. You can't. Like, you can't attack everything like it's the end of the world, because it's fucking not. Right, it's just some shit you have to let go. You have to develop a sense of, is this worth my time? And if it isn't, then, you know, at least that for me, because I come back to this thing a lot where I feel like time is really the only currency that matters. You can always get more money. Anything else can be replaced. You can buy a new arm. You can have another kid. You can have another wife. You can buy another house. You can get another job. But you can never, ever, ever, ever get your fucking time back. So I'm very, very conscious of stuff that robs me of my time, because it's too valuable to give away on bullshit.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I have a question. Hold on. I have a question for you. Can you tell me how did you get connected on the project with Bunny? Because I read the book. I mean, I loved it, and the artwork is amazing. And yeah, I mean, you really didn't even need the dialogue, because you were able to tell the story beautifully, frame by frame. And
I really appreciate that. Thank you very much for that. And no one's seen it. I think you guys are the only people that have seen it so far, because we had to suspend so much of this stuff because of the viral apocalypse. But
right.
I'm going to tread lightly, because I'm under such exhaustive NDAs here that, like, okay, I don't want to inadvertently step in a bear trap.
Right.
What I can tell you is that when I was approached about it, at first I was a little reluctant, just because it was so ambitious. I was like, I don't know, guys. Like, this is it's one of those, like, it sounds great, but to pull it off, all this stuff has to work. And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, that's a lot. And but Patrick, whose name is on the book, who is responsible for a lot of this stuff, he and I've gotten to know each other and are very like-minded creatively. And there's all these other people involved. There's all this other stuff. And it went from, to make a long story short, the stuff that they've done to realize it made me a believer, to the point where I felt like I could really make a substantial contribution.
Nice.
And it's unfortunate, not just for the project, obviously, but for everyone, the world at large. But in terms of our specific plans and what was specifically going on with Bunny, there's really a transmedia thing. Like, what they're trying to do is something that is pretty ambitious and pretty wide reaching. And hasn't been tried. I'm not going to say no one's ever tried to do it, because a lot of people have. but not that many people have been able to successfully do what they're trying to do. And I give them a lot of credit because they're it's not just talk. They really are, like, you guys know, man, like, there's a, when you hear about stuff like this, there's a requisite amount of things that you immediately think, well, because there's not a lot of wiggle room. Either it's going to be really legit or it's right. going to be stupid and corny. Right. You know right. what I mean? Like, right. and, yeah. Yeah. and I don't, and I don't take myself that seriously, but I take what I do pretty seriously. And I've worked mm-hmm. my ass off for my reputation, and I don't want to, like, risk it on some clown show bullshit. I mean, right. that's the bottom yeah. line is, like, you know, yeah. I don't want to risk having that target on my back.
Right.
So there was kind of this, you know, a period where we were going back and forth, and they were kind of laying out their plans, and you know, and then it got to the point where they're like, well, what do you think about this, and what do you think about that? And I was like, listen, is this like Hollywood, what do you think, where you really want me to just agree with you, or do you really want to know what I think? And he's like, no, we really want to know what you think. And I was like, well, this, and this. And they're like, all right, let's do it. I was like, just like that. Like, just nice. Like that. And nice. They've stepped up, man. And like, we're in months and months into this. And we have some really, really exciting, legit stuff going on. And a lot of the people involved are very, very, I don't know, man, really committed to making it objectively really good. It's not a cash in. It's not a gimmick. Like, yeah. And I don't, you know, you can't predetermine. I don't know how successful it's going to be. You know, it's always hindsight. I mean, I don't know how it's going to play out, but I can tell you from my involvement very personally and the material I've seen and the plans that I know are in place and they've amassed a huge wealth of resources and stuff that when they're ready to launch, they've got some bombs to drop. From that point of view, I can tell you, I think it's going to be really cool and I'm really excited and I'm really glad to be part of it. And I think a lot of the people involved are really cool and really give a shit about making it legit and making it really cool. And so far, I think they've succeeded there or are succeeding. Cause yeah. I'm on the inside looking out, but yeah, man, I'm really excited about it. I'm really grateful to be involved. And I think when we have a chance to open the doors and really get it out there, I hope that it resonates with people the way that it's resonated with me.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, it looks...
How's that for a savvy diplomat?
Yeah, well, it's been a whole mystery.
I'm ready. I'm yeah, ready
yeah.
for it.
You know, we connected on Twitter. Bunny actually reached out to me on Twitter, and that's how this whole conversation started. And it's been mysterious the whole way through, because it was a point where, like, you're going to be on the show, you're not going to be on the show, and then she told me about you, and I was like, all right, let's yeah. see if the phone rings.
And there is like, legit a Bunny, too. Like, it's not... One day we'll be able to the thing I keep coming back to is you guys are New Yorkers. When I was a little kid, man, especially, I told you I was laid up for a while, Kiss loomed very large in my consciousness when I was a kid.
Kiss, yeah.
And again, I didn't know they were four dudes from Brooklyn. I just thought they were like superpowered rock stars, man. I was like, come on, you know. But they committed to that shit. I mean, it was years yeah. before anybody saw them with no makeup. They went to right. great, great lengths to maintain that. There is a lot of that same work ethic in play here.
Right. Okay.
That's awesome, dude.
But he's got some world-class people, man, that the suits, the helmet, I know they've shot a bunch of stuff. There's a bunch of test footage. There's effects footage. There's all kinds of visual and video components. It's pretty ambitious, man. And there's a lot more ground covered than you would think from just a stupid ass comic book.
Nice.
Dude, but that comic book was fire though. I really liked it, man. Congratulations on that.
Well, thanks for saying that, man. I really appreciate it. Cause like I said, I'm in a weird vacuum, but I mean, as far as I know, you guys are the only guys that have seen it other than us.
And we didn't realize that. I got it at midnight. I read it at 3 a.m. and, I reached out to George. I was like, you know, I'm looking forward to this conversation because this guy's artwork is fantastic.
It's amazing.
Well, thanks
dude.
For that. Sincerely, I really appreciate that, man. Thank you.
You got it. And, Jeff, it's just funny how you worked on the Star Wars project in this past week being, you know, on house arrest for this pandemic that's going on. I've watched The Mandalorian. I've been watching every episode of Clone Wars.
Oh, nice.
Nah, dude. Hey, man. You know what? We want to have you back on the show, and where we can have a little more time to talk to you about some of the stuff that you're doing.
Hey, yes, man. I'm down for whatever. It's been a total pleasure. Sweet. You guys are wonderful, and I hope I didn't, I hope I didn't make a complete ass of myself. But I really appreciate the time. And if you guys need anything, man, don't hesitate. Just give me a shout.
Definitely. I did send you a. I did connect with you on both on Twitter and on Instagram. You'll see Catch the Craze or Crazy Comics on Twitter. That's us.
Oh, cool, man.
But yes, it was great having you in the show. We want to have you back again. You know, we're going to direct everybody to your website because there's so many layers to you that we can go on forever. But we have another show we have to record very soon.
No, absolutely.
Thank you again.
But thanks, bro. I really appreciate it. You guys take good care. You stay safe out there. Don't let people give you a hard time. Wash your fucking hands. And you give me a shout whenever you want me on, and I'm there.
You got it, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care, man.
All right, gentlemen.
Bye.
I'll see you soon. Bye.
Later.
Fantastic. We're going to cut. Thank you for listening to Cast the Craze. We'll talk more about Jeff, and we're going to end credit here.
See you next week.
No, I was talking about my friend Aquise. I met him. Say my name, say my name. Right?
This is what you were thinking? Yes. Oh,
my. He was crappy. He said, I'm the.
You're listening to Catch the Craze. You're the.